Okay. All right, Earl, do you want to do like an intro?
Sure.
We're here with...
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the Sports Parent Podcast, where we talk about sports and parenting and the intersection between sports and parenting, hosted by best-selling author Jeff Perlman.
And Catherine Perlman, also known as the Family Coach.
It doesn't make me sound like a nice family coach when you say it like that.
Oh, it's like a Darth
Vader. I'm not Darth Vader. I'm like a friendly, like...
Are you ready?
Yeah.
And Catherine Perlman, also known as, yes, the Family Coach.
I like that better.
Our guest this week is Sean Green, former Major League Baseball All-Star, nice Jewish boy from Los Angeles, and in retirement, my favorite thing, a competitive dance dad.
You actually just said nice Jewish boy.
Like... He's a nice Jewish boy from Los Angeles.
Oh, boy.
Becky, you have to meet the Sean Green. But before we begin our show, today our sponsor is B2 Design. B2 Design takes pride in planning, strategizing, organizing your online content to make your message clear and concise. B2 Design works with clients of all sizes. The Family Coach used B2 Design to create her website and logo, which she
loves.
And my website, jeffperlman.com, was also designed by B2 Design, which she also respects or loves.
Love.
Thanks. You don't really seem to read that many of my blog posts, though.
That's for the benefit of our marriage.
For more information on building a beautiful new website that your wife will never read or updating an old one, get in touch with Brant Beaupre at brant@b2design.net. Now, we're gonna start the show with a thing I thought of today on the couch. Every week, I'm going to come up. So newspapers.com, I've been raving about this one. Newspapers.com is awesome. It's not a sponsor of the show. But you can dig through tons of clips. And I thought every week I'm going to come up with an old parenting story and get your take real quick, okay? So this is from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, February 1st, 1930. Catherine does not know what the story is. We have that arrangement, correct?
Yes.
Boy has mother arrested, semicolon, followed her to speakeasy. Then it says, Chicago woman fined $10 to be worked out in jail to cure her. 12-year-old Jason Gender had his mother arrested because he believed that was the only way to keep the Gender home together. He followed his mother to her speakeasy yesterday, then called police. Mrs. Gender, a woman companion, and her man were arrested. Appearing before Judge John Loopy, the boy said, I think you had better send my mother to the Bridewell. That may cure her. Judge Loopy fined her $10 to be worked out at the House of Correction. How can we help the family coach?
Actually, I don't think the family needs my help. Well, that's not true. You know, I have to say... It's pretty impressive on this kid because a lot of kids wouldn't want to report their parents. But if a kid is living in an unsafe environment, you'd want the kid to be able to speak up.
I like how he followed his mom to the old speakeasy.
He's now a detective in the 049. And
I think we need to change the name of our studio to the old speakeasy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think they're probably going to need a little family counseling after she gets out of the clink. But I do think it's pretty interesting that this boy took charge and he tried to save his family. I appreciate that.
Trivia question. Why are their problems all solved?
Because she went to rehab. I don't know.
Because they're dead. That was 1930. Catherine, what's going on this week? What's on your mind?
Okay. So I've always been a little interested and a little scared of homeschooling. You may already know this.
I do.
And part of the reason I've always felt uncomfortable about it is... It seemed like the people who wanted to homeschool were kind of like the Duggars.
Jesus tells me the dinosaurs created man.
Okay. And the thing is, it seemed like it was based on a value system of inclusion and protection. And there was just something about that always felt wrong to me. Mm-hmm. But since we moved here, I've met a number of people who have... who are homeschooling. And it seems like a lot of people in this neck of the woods are homeschooling for a variety of reasons. Some of them have opened my eyes a little bit. I met a family who they do homeschooling. They have 5 kids. They do homeschooling because they're pretty much done by 11:30. And they have the rest of the afternoon to play. I thought, that actually sounds pretty nice. They can go to museums. They can meet other families. They go to the beach. I met another family who the 2 kids are really big surfers. So... They pretty much surf all morning and go to school in the afternoon. And yet still, I met another family where the dad has kind of unconventional hours. And so he would never see his kids. So they homeschool so that when he's around, the kids can spend time with him. Anyway, I've sort of been opening my mind a little bit, which is pretty amazing because I've been a little close-minded here. But then I saw a woman who runs the blog called HipHomeschoolingBlog.com.
There ain't nothing hip about homeschooling. Even if homeschooling's okay, there's nothing hip about it.
According to Rebecca, the Hip Homeschooling Blog mom, she thinks it's awesome. And so I saw something come up on Facebook. It was the pros and cons of homeschooling. So I thought, well, this is interesting. I'm wondering what people who do homeschooling, what they think the pros and cons are. I was genuinely interested. So she starts with what her pros and cons are. She finds some other homeschooling mom, what their pros and cons are. And then she decides to end the pros and cons with her husband's take on pros and cons.
I just want to say what I love is, like, this sounds like it's going to be just a talk on homeschooling and the debates, and then this thing just falls off a cliff.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of how it was for me. All the pros and cons that had come up to this point, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. May not be for me, but okay, that makes sense to me. So this is what Rebecca's husband says his pros of homeschooling are. Homeschooling makes my wife more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
There is an appeal to your woman taking care of your kids and committing to her family so wholly.
Could not agree more.
Yeah. Bragworthy. I love bragging that my wife homeschools to my coworkers.
I do that all the time.
Yikes. I know where my wife is. I don't have to worry where Rebecca is or if she's okay. She doesn't spend as much money, and I feel confident and at ease knowing she's at home.
The thing is, when I'm at the strip club and I know you're home, that's good.
There's just something that feels like very objectifying of the wife. It does not feel like a partnership. Am I wrong?
No, you're like, there's something objectifying. It sounds like he basically married a piece of meat who he would be happy to have chained to the house. So,
pretty much. Well, there's one more. What's a con of homeschooling for him is he misses his alone time with his wife. If my kids were in school, we would only have one kid at home during the day as opposed to five. I just miss having her to myself. She's always busy doing something, and I don't like that.
What a douche. Seriously.
Oh my God, it's the third episode out of five. You've used douche on the radio.
That's how I do. I mean, seriously, horrible. And I just want to say, I hate the idea of homeschooling. I really do. I know there are circumstances, certain issues, behavioral, blah, 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 developmental. Overall, though, I really am opposed to homeschooling.
Why?
Well, number one reason by far, I think sometimes people miss a point of school, right? So you think, all right, on a surface level, school is about academics and learning. But it's not just about what's in a book, or it's about actually behaving with other kids. There are kids at school. There's one kid at school this year our son hates, right? He does not like him. He finds him annoying. He has to deal with him every week after school. And there's something very beneficial about that.
That same dynamic happens. A lot of people who do homeschooling, they have homeschooling groups. They meet at different places with various people. They take trips with various other homeschool families, and they still can have that.
I don't know. I think if you're selecting, I just think like there's something nice and consistent and important about going every day to a school, sitting down with different kids, not just selected by your parents, but a bunch of different kids from different backgrounds and blah, 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 and dealing with it. And I also think it's important, very important, and I know you agree with me, to be away from your parents. Like, it's important to be away from your parents. You don't want to be with your parents all the time. It's not good to always have your parents are looming over you.
Well, I do think the real world hits you like a ton of bricks when you've been extremely sheltered. Unless you're going to stay in that sheltered environment and work and live, at some point you may go to college or you may have a job with people who are very different from you, who have very different value systems, and you have to figure out how to moderate that. But what if I said to you,
no,
we have an opportunity to take a trip around the world with the kids for a year, but we have to homeschool them?
1 year, I would consider. Okay. I would consider
short term.
Very short term. Anyway.
All right. Well, this guy, Rebecca's husband, he really disturbed me, and I actually felt kind of sad for Rebecca. But she seems pretty happy with her.
Yeah, Rebecca's good. Rebecca loves her husband.
She's hip. All right. What do you got, Jeff?
I got something interesting.
Well, I just called you Jeff.
We were sitting on the couch, and I was like, I got something I want to talk about today. So, as you know, I'm working on a book about the United States Football League, a long ago defunct league from the early 80s. And I came across this player, and he was a linebacker with the Washington Federals. In the early 80s, he played his college ball at Arizona, had a lot of drug problems, and I called his, he died. He died of AIDS in the early 90s. And I called his ex-wife, who had been his wife, was his wife only a brief time, to talk about him. And she started talking about her. And she actually said to me, I'm amazed that you found me. And it was a hard find, I gotta say. She's like, I'm amazed you found me. I would love your help. And she started telling me about her daughter, who now is in her mid-30s, who basically lost it. Her daughter, she has a daughter who she said is schizophrenic, who she's had live with her a couple of times. And whenever she's there, she put, for example, this woman said her daughter put her car on eBay, you know, said she, on Craigslist, said she would paint all the walls without telling her, said she would steal from her repeatedly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the daughter has a four-year-old son. So this mom was talking to me. She's looking for her daughter. She's looking for some, but she doesn't know what to do. And I said to her, you know, I'm okay at finding people. I said, but if people are in any sort of mental treatment facility or if they're homeless, it's almost impossible. But I wanted to ask you, because you dealt, you know, we haven't talked about this, but you worked at Covenant House for years with a lot of homeless youth. And I know you've seen a lot of mental issues over the years. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I don't know what to say to this woman. Like, what is there even to do? Nothing, right? There's nothing I could do, right?
Well, I mean, parenting a child with severe mental illness who's an adult or has severe addiction, there's really only so much that parent can do. I mean, it's the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make it drink. I mean, it's so true. A parent of an adult child, unless they're a danger to themselves or others, they can't have them committed. And they can't make them take their medication. And they can't make them stay off the streets or stay clean. And I think it's really heartbreaking for a parent, and especially a parent whose kid is schizophrenic, because, or even, you know, becomes a drug addict, because a lot of times these kids are completely typical until adolescence, 18, 19, even 20, 21. And then either the addiction or the schizophrenia starts to come out. And I think when you've been dealing with these issues all along with a difficult child or a child who has autism, I think you have time to prepare for the adulthood. But I think when it comes on suddenly in late adolescence, early adulthood, parents are really left feeling very robbed and very pained about seeing the change in their child. And really, there's only so much that you can do.
It just seems like sometimes we forget, you know, we almost want people to get on with their lives, right? You have this problem, you have that problem, but, or we'll give you a little time, but then you got to get on. But just think, like, you're this woman, you have one child. She said she worked really hard. They weren't supposed to be able to have kids. They had this one daughter. Your ex-husband died of AIDS. This is all you have, this daughter, and she's gone. She's lost to you, and you have no idea. And I just think you live with that every day.
I never think that people should just move.
You but know, a lot of people do.
I guess so, but it's people who don't really understand pain. And, I mean, this woman, I'm sure, is in constant, constant pain. I'm sure she sees other neighbors whose kids have grandkids, and they get to see them, and that hurts her. I'm sure she's afraid. She doesn't know where her daughter is. I'm sure she's worried that she's on the streets, or maybe she's dead. I mean, she doesn't even know. So when you told me her story, I felt a lot of empathy for her. And I think that I wish there were more resources out there really to help her or her daughter.
It's a bummer.
Yeah.
But that being said, we have to move on. So, Catherine.
Yes.
What's going on in the news? What you got?
I have a great story.
Wait, that sounds cool saying that. Wait, hold on. What you got?
No, not at all. Wait, I just want to say one thing. We've upgraded the closet studio, have we not?
We got two snack trays.
Yes.
And we have two plastic seats. Where do we buy these
folding
seats?
Folding chairs. I think Costco.
Two Costco folding chairs, two snack trays.
So we're actually not huddled on the floor, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, we're rolling.
All righty. Okay, I have a great news story. I mean, absolutely amazing. The mayor of Moni, Illinois, he is also the coach of 7 and 8 year olds in baseball, like literally.
That's awesome that a mayor is volunteering to coach. That sounds great.
Yeah, it is great. Yeah. I'm not sure if his daughter's on the team, but apparently during a recent game, the ump decided to give a girl who struck out an extra chance at the bat.
That sounds great.
I guess so. I actually have seen this happen before, and coaches kind of at that younger age go back and forth whether the kid's upset, just give him one more, or
if it's no crime.
It's not a crime, exactly. So apparently the coach slash mayor was furious at the ump, started yelling, and the ump was trying to explain to him why he did it. And the next thing you know, the mayor clocked him in the jaw, broke his jaw, and now the ump has his jaw wired shut. So what happened was the other coaches came, took the mayor away, and subsequently the Moni Little League suspended the mayor from the league. He can't coach, and he's banned from attending any games.
But he can still serve as mayor.
Well, for currently, he can still serve as mayor. So I have a few things I'd like to discuss.
Please.
About this. Number one, I just think it's really important to note that this was a game for 7 and 8 year olds. Now, I would never condone punching anyone, let alone probably a volunteer or a very low paid umpire. Mm-hmm. But we have to also keep in perspective, this is a game for 7 and 8 year olds. Like, these are little kids. Like, it's not really that big of a deal. He kind of lost his crap for nothing. Second of all, I think as a mayor, you have an added responsibility to uphold yourself in a
dignified.
Thank you. In a dignified. I think of the mayor that used to be in our old hometown, Noam Bramson, from
New Rochelle, New York.
Right.
Very home of
Dick Van Dyke Show.
Ray Rice.
Okay. Anyway, to me, the mayor is a very important figurehead and the kind of person you get excited to see, you shake hands with, and, you know, he's a dignified guy. Well, this mayor, not a dignified guy. Very disappointing. He really, I think, let his town down. And I think it sends a horrible message to the kids. Like, your coach just goes up there and slugs. And I guarantee there's, like, one kid that's like, wow, that was awesome. You know what I mean?
I'll say a few things, a few quick thoughts.
Yeah.
Number one, as you know, I've coached a few of our kids' sports teams.
Yep.
And I try to emphasis on fun. I will say there are moments when you slightly lose your crap during a game. You know, I'm not saying I've never even come close to that. But, you know, the game's close. The kid's not hustling, blah, blah, blah. So I do understand that, right? I do. I really do. And we see it a million times. And it's not excusable. And it's another reason parents kind of ruin youth sports. But it does happen. So, and I do think, like, we do have to make allowances that people are human. You know what I mean? Like, people are human and people do make mistakes. I'm being serious about that. People do make mistakes, factually.
Okay. I totally agree. People make mistakes. I guarantee you I'm going to go my whole life without ever punching anybody in the jaw. Like, there's a certain level of self-control.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, well, this guy
I'm not saying we should congratulate the guy for doing it. I think it's horrible. But I'm saying, like, I wouldn't want to, like, I don't think he, like, needs to resign from being mayor. I think he just needs, like, to apologize, to acknowledge he was wrong, to, like, take this kid out for a hell of a lunch. Like, I do think, like, I think sometimes we forget. I really do. And I know people be like, well, are you crazy? Sometimes we just easily forget that we're all human and we all have our moments. We just all have our bad moments.
You don't think the state of youth sports has anything to do with the overreaction of this guy?
Of course I do.
So to me, it's a bigger problem than some mayor.
Yeah, because there are millions of these guys. Not millions, but there are thousands of these guys across the country losing their crap, and it's embarrassing and pathetic.
And if the coach is doing this for 7, 8 year olds, what do you think is going to happen when the kids are 13?
I mean, they go ballistic.
I think his coaching history might be over.
The mayor is unavailable today.
All right, well, what do you got?
I have something awesome. So, we've been married 14 years. I don't know. Would you say I've gotten a few hate Twitter tweets and letters and stuff over the years?
Yes. You've gotten some really bad ones.
I'll tell you my first hate letter ever, which I have somewhere. I should frame it. There was a columnist I was writing at the Tennessee, and I wrote a column. I was an intern, and I wrote a column, a really ill-advised column about how people in the South talk funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. It was the worst. I don't know what I was thinking. And I get a postcard with a heart on it, and on the back it just says, F you, Yankee Jew boy, go home.
Nice.
And so that was good. But anyway, so I've always been kind of, you know, aware of this stuff. And
wait, can you just tell the one about the guy who texted you a picture of his tushy hole?
Oh my God, that was the worst. That, what did I write about again?
I don't even, well, nothing could justify it. The thing was when it came up on your phone.
But you know what the best part was? Remember the best part?
Found him, yeah.
I wrote something and someone sent me, it was basically split open rear end. It was really grotesque. Send me the picture.
Close up.
It was like, hey, I have a response to you, and it was an attachment. I naively opened it. And I ended up writing a column for CNN.com where I tracked down people who said stuff, and I found this guy. I found him in a really roundabout way and exposed him. And then he was like, oh, you exposed me, wow, wow, wow. And I was like, don't go sending pictures of, you know, that kind of junk. Anyway,
sorry,
we digress.
Yeah.
I digress. Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors, struggling in these NBA finals, but still going pretty strong, has not been the victim of Twitter hate so much as his sister, Seidel, who's younger and in college. And she tweeted the other day, and some guy, Soft Caramel Kiss, that's his Twitter handle, tweeted to Steph Curry's little sister, you and your whole family get the F out of Cleveland and take Riley's effing A with you. Okay? So she responded, you know, let's have a conversation. She actually tried to make peace with this guy, which I've tried before too. And sometimes it works. Sometimes like, oh, I was kind of a jerk. And other times people love that they got you. Like they love.
Well, he was pretty psyched that she responded.
Yeah, he wrote back, yo, she replied to me. I'm in love. Then he tweeted. She tweeted, are we going to converse or not? He wrote back through DMs only. And she basically kind of said, what, are you scared? You were talking a lot of junk and now you're not. And then she said, y'all Cali people too soft. WTF. Why y'all let words offend you? BTW, by the way, tell the unanimous MVP I said good game because he had had a bad game. This guy's name, by the way, was Mo Wadan, Whadan. And I just want to say, I love when guys like Mo Wadan mock the NBA's leading scorer, MVP, and a guy who won 73 games this year because he had a bad game. Ooh, Mo Wadan sitting there on your Twitter account. Pretty good. So here's a beauty. Twitter exchange went back and forth.
I just want to say the problem wasn't that he was like sending hate towards the player. It was that he was talking about the 3-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah. So then he ended up, I was going to get that out. Then he ended up tweeting some really nasty about Steph Curry's sister and daughter.
Yeah.
So here's the beauty that I absolutely love.
This is what you love about Twitter.
Oh, my God. Well, I love this. Someone alerted this moron's employer, right? Holton Wise, and they fired him. They actually fired him on the spot. And this guy, I love it. He got fired. It became big news. And he actually tweeted, hey, right? I lost my job, but they lost the game. Who really lost here? Answer, you freaking moron. You don't have a job and you're unemployable right now. That's a thing. And this is a lesson that I hope every kid, every like college kid who's posting, I mean, it's old news, but posting a picture of yourself chugging beers or hooking up or whatever, like, this stuff does not just vanish. In fact, we talk about this with Snapchat because our daughter desperately wants Snapchat and she does not have Snapchat. And you always make the point that
there's this false sense that, you know, you put it out there and a couple years later it goes away, but it doesn't.
So it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah. So to this guy, to our buddy, Mo Wadan, you are the sports parent dolt of the week.
Yeah.
Mazel tov. Next up. We have our big interview of the day with Sean Green, former Los Angeles Dodgers slugger. But first, Catherine, you'd like to share a little advertisement.
I would. Early, I'd like to tell you more about my Tower Garden by Juice Plus.
What is it?
Well, it's a vertical garden. It grows up instead of out, and it has recycled water. The thing is the most ingenious invention ever.
At this point, you've just described the minute bowl of garden. It sounds tall and it sounds wonderful.
Well, I do like my note bowl. Okay, so here's the thing I love. It's the joy of gardening without any of the hassle. There's no weeding. It uses recycled water, which is great in California. It doesn't take up any room because, like I said, it's a vertical garden. It has a pleasant waterfall sound every 15 seconds. Have you heard this? I mean, not 15 seconds, 15
like that,
minutes.
Right?
No, it doesn't really sound like that.
Can I just say, by the way, in the middle of this ad, I know all the words to the Waterfalls rap from TLC.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Okay. Nobody wants to hear it. Lettuce and vegetables grow faster in the Tower Garden than they do in the ground. So if you want to learn more about the absolutely amazing Tower Garden, contact Lisa Blaisdell by checking out her Tower Garden website at Lisa Blaisdell, LisaBlaisdell. TowerGarden.com. And don't forget to mention the sports parent to receive 5 free seedlings with your order of a Tower Garden.
Our guest today is Sean Green. I used to cover Sean in the major leagues back when I was at SI. Sean is a 2-time All-Star, drove in 100 runs 4 times, hit 40 home runs 3 times, played for the Blue Jays, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the Mets. Sean, let me ask you, if you had to go into Hall of Fame as a Diamondback or a Met, who would you go in as?
Oh, if it was between those two, I'd go in as a Met. Arizona, I enjoyed it there, but you're kind of everyone's second favorite team, at least when I was there, are still pretty new, and not too many people that were from Phoenix. You got a lot of Cubs fans, a lot of Cardinals fans, a lot of Mets fans, et cetera. So I'd have to say the Mets, they have a really strong, historic fan base.
Also, didn't every Jewish mother in New York want to adopt you and offer you a corned beef sandwich or pastrami?
Yeah. Definitely, but it was, I was getting to the end of my career, obviously, it was the very end of my career. So I think it would have been a little different had I been, you know, a 21, 22-year-old, because that's when they really want to take you in.
Yeah, right. They want you to meet their daughters. All right, go ahead, Catherine.
So you grew up in Southern California. We live in Southern California. You grew up playing baseball, and you live here now. So we're kind of curious, do you think things have changed
in terms of the way parents are with baseball? You think it's always been this way? What do you think the state of affairs is right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think parents are very, you know, I guess overindulgent and overzealous on their kids' endeavors. I mean, I think when, even when it comes to knowing all the families at the schools and having a say in everything. When I was a kid, my parents couldn't name, you know, three kids in my class. I usually went to school and you did your thing. And in sports, my dad was the coach a lot. I think a lot of guys who end up making it to the major leagues have a parent, an uncle, or, you know, an older brother that's very involved and helps teach them how to play the game. But at the same time, it was a different mentality. It was not about every kid is going to be, you know, the next Hall of Famer.
Do you feel like there is a negative, you know, like it's hard to say, because on the one hand, we have a ton of kids around here who are playing year round baseball, and you can see the improvement. I mean, it's undeniable. You can see the improvement compared to the kids who play baseball, then basketball, then football, or maybe take a season off. And I'm really conflicted on it, because on the one hand, you want your kid to be able to compete with the others. And on the other hand, you kind of feel like your kid's going to be burned out by the time he's 12. So what do we do here?
Yeah, so I mean, I can just speak from my own experiences. I played basketball and soccer until I was 10, basketball until I was a freshman in high school. And the advantage for me was that I had a batting cage in my yard. So what happened as a kid when I was like 8 or 9, had a pitching machine, didn't have any room. We had just an empty side yard. So, you know, we threw up a net and brought this kid's pitching machine in my backyard and had it there for a couple of years. And then once they took the machine back, we had a cage sitting there. So my dad got a machine. And for me, that was, you know, whether I was playing basketball or soccer or whatever other sports, I always was in the cage hitting. And that's the key with baseball. And especially, you know, if you're not a pitcher and you want to be a position player, it's just a lot of reps. So it's not about, I don't think it's as much about playing so many games on so many different travel teams and this and that. It's more about, you know, spending a half hour a day hitting. And that I think is the biggest difference. It's something that, I remember sitting in a cab one time with Carlos Delgado, and we were going to Comiskey, and he was on the phone just, you know, rattling off Spanish as fast as he could talk. He holds his hand over the phone, looks at me and says, "My dad's telling me how to hit again." So I mean, it doesn't matter where guys are from. It's having, I think, that exposure and the coaching, but more importantly, it's the reps. And I know the Blue Jays, when I was drafted by them, they were very focused. They had drafted Eric Lindros. They had Danny Ainge, as you know. Mm-hmm. So they were very focused on people who were athletic, and they wanted people that they loved the fact that Chris Wanky was a great football player and drafted him in the second round. It was much more about getting athletes, and the mentality in baseball is they could teach you how to play baseball.
Right.
So when you were growing up, obviously baseball was a big part of your life, but were there other things that you did? Did you have other hobbies? Did you play, you know, stickball or baseball with a bunch of kids around? Did you play basketball, pick up in the yard? I mean, did you have other hobbies and stuff, or was it really focused on baseball?
Yeah, I mean, my hobbies a lot of times did center around baseball. So, yeah, my friends and I would play wiffle ball. We have, you know, depending whose house we went to, we had, you know, each one had their home field and, you know, the different rules for each, you know, in front of the yards, out in the streets or whatever. And that was a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was saying, I mean, that's playing baseball, even though it's, you know, not organized, and you're throwing, you're hitting, and you're learning how to play the game.
Let me ask you this. You wrote a book, a great book, that talked a lot about sort of the mental element of baseball. And I was just thinking about it this morning, because I feel like every little league field and every game my kid has played, there's some dad when his kid is hitting who goes, "Swing, don't swing, you know, blah, 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 what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?" Can any argument be made, like any argument, even in the slightest way, that that is helpful to the kid?
Absolutely not helpful. Because I mean, that's kind of reminds me of another story. So when I was playing for the Dodgers, we were having a bad offensive season, including myself. And I think it was like maybe 2003. And I remember Kevin Brown was super frustrated. You know, he's very, as you I'm sure covered him, you know, he could be very volatile. And we had this team meeting, and it was like, we got to start, just bearing down. We got to get some hits. We got to score runs. All we need is 2 or 3 runs. Our pitching is so good on this team, and which was true. But that, I remember being up there and hearing it in Coors Field, hearing Kevin Brown screaming, let's go, bear down, focus. And I'm up there hitting, and after the game, I was talking to other guys, like, I feel like I'm in Little League, and there's some crazy dad yelling, and it was making it harder. And hitting is hard enough, so when you add other pressures to it, it only makes it worse. And I'm sure it's the same with other sports.
I just want to say, any negative feelings you had toward Kevin Brown were amplified times 1,000 by the media. So anything bad you went through, I can empathize.
There's no negative feelings.
No, I know.
Yeah, but he was definitely a good teammate. But he had his moments where he was, as he'd get a little fiery, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
Well, our daughter plays water polo, sport we've never played, and I wouldn't say either of us are particularly good swimmers. But one day they have a family game, and up till that point, I'm thinking, call for the ball or swim. I'm like yelling like things for her to do in the pool. I know nothing about water polo, but regardless, I almost couldn't help myself, even though I know all the things you said, it's not helpful. And then we went to the family game and we tried to play. 4 minutes later, Jeff and I nearly drowned. After that, I was cured. So I'm wondering if you think that there's any way to cure the current state of parents, trying to coach from the sidelines, whatever it is, it's not helpful. And, I think it does damage.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the cure, but it's funny because if you're ever around youth sports where there's a former professional athlete or Olympian or someone that's had a lot of success, you'll notice that 9 times out of 10 that person's super mellow, and the one that's not yelling, and it's kind of funny because that tends to be the case. I remember hearing Paul Quantrill, who had the best control of any pitcher that I ever played with. His son is now a pitcher at Stanford and a really good prospect. The coach was screaming at him to aim the ball and this and that. And here he didn't realize that his dad was this incredible control pitcher. But Paul just kind of kept his mouth shut, sat on the sideline, sat on the bench and watched. And I think that's more the tendency of the parents who have been through it.
So are you, you have 2 daughters who are heavily involved, as you told me last night, in dance. Are you the father? Are you the dance dad who's sitting on the sideline? Or do you pull the teacher aside and say, what is wrong with you? When I was playing.
No, I mean, it's funny. I actually, my little daughter's, she's our comedian, and she finds it funny. We joke around, like when we're walking, if I'm walking her into, her call time, and there's all these people, sometimes we'll pretend like I'm this crazy parent, and I'm like yelling at her to big smiles, make sure your toes are pointed. I'm like, and while people are kind of giving me dirty looks, so it's kind of fun. And then, it's our little joke. But no, I mean, I'm just, my goal to get through those is that there's no tears. That's my goal. So as long as they're happy, I find it kind of strange that dance has become a competition. But they're both really, really good dancers, and that's the key. They're happy, they're getting exercise, and they're making good friends, and that's all I care about.
What's some of the craziest stuff you've seen backstage?
Well, I fortunately don't go backstage, nor do I want to go backstage when all the girls are changing. But you see a lot of like moms panicking, sprinting back there if their kid doesn't do something right on the stage and wanting to console. I understand the consoling, but I mean, there's, I actually, last time I had to drive back 1 hour each way, going about 90 miles an hour because my daughter forgot a hat that, it's about 1 hour. And this hat, and there's like 12 girls in the dance. So if she didn't have a hat, it would have been actually, a big deal for the dance. But I was, here I am racing 90 miles an hour to putting my life in danger and everyone else's to try to get this hat.
Did you make it on time?
I did. Fortunately, they tend to run late, but I got there 6 minutes before the dance was supposed to go on, but it went on like 20 minutes late.
Oh, nice.
I notice parents consoling their kids a lot, and sometimes I wonder, and you see the kid looks visibly upset, but I wonder in those cases, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Sometimes the parents have this overblown, are you okay? Oh my gosh, it's all right. Don't worry about it. And then I think the kid learns to have this defeated attitude to get all of the consoling afterwards. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, it's especially the younger kids. But it's funny with the dance, like the worst medal you can get for every, like, they give, everyone gets a medal for every dance is a gold. So there's high gold, and then there's, you know, elite gold and platinum gold. I mean, it's like all these different, the lowest is gold. It's like, you know, at the first time, all the parents are confused because you don't really know what these different levels are. And then after the first dance, the kids are crying if they get a gold because it's the worst one. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know why everyone gets so caught up on the semantics or the, you know, the details of the award as opposed to, you know, just understanding that it's okay to get third place or it's okay to not get, you know, the highest category, and everyone's quick to make sure their kids are feeling so good about themselves. I think that's why a lot of times we're raising, you know, a generation that is doesn't have necessarily the same kind of grit that the people who are used to, you know, getting knocked down, getting up again have had to figure out.
Right. It basically is to show you, no matter what you call it, if you call it a gold, it doesn't matter. Last is last. The kids know.
Last is last.
They know.
That's right.
And I've come in last a lot. All right, Sean, five questions for you. Here we go.
Speed round.
Okay.
Speed round. Number one, memory from your appearance on that home repair show where they give the people a new house.
Oh, playing wiffle ball in the backyard.
Fair enough. I think you're on with Dave Roberts. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, and the dugout wizard, if you remember the old baseball bunch, Tommy Lasorda was there.
Yeah, of course. Question number two. What can you tell us? One memory from your senior prom.
Senior prom. My buddies all had, they were all Hessians with long hair. Remember that.
Number three, one food you would never eat.
Let's see. Anything with mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, bravo. Number four, Hall & Oates or Elton John?
Hall & Oates.
Thank you. Man. And number five, the most important one, you were teammates with a longtime second baseman for the Dodgers and a million other teams named Mark Grzelenik. Can you spell his last name?
I should be able to. Grudzielanek.
Wow. Holy crap. How were you able to do that?
I mean, I saw it over and over again on the scoreboard, so it kind of eventually gets ingrained, but it would have been very easy to miss a letter or two, for sure.
If I had the triple gold platinum silver award right now for the first place for spelling, I'd give it to you.
Sean Green.
I appreciate it. I still haven't forgot that in third grade, I missed the spelling bee. I missed beyond. I was devastated. I spelled it B-H-O-N-D, and I've never forgive myself.
Ah, man, bummer. Sean, we want to thank you for being on here today. You can follow Sean Green on Twitter at SeanGreen15, although you don't tweet enough, Sean.
I don't tweet. I should. I don't.
Right. No worries. All right, Sean, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
So I told you he'd be good. Did I not tell you he'd be good?
You did indeed.
And I'll tell you, when I was covering baseball, I think I annoyed the hell out of Sean Green because I always thought there was a Jewish connection, which is silly because about 40% of the media are Jewish, but I'd always be like, hey, Sean.
Yeah, but not 40% of the players.
Best bagels in. Yeah, so I would always talk to Sean Green about being Jewish. And actually, I once did a story about him, and I talked to his very good friend and former Toronto teammate, Carlos Delgado. And I didn't know him. He didn't know me. And he actually accused me of being anti-Semitic because I was asking Jewish questions. And I was like, yeah, so I'm Jewish. But hey, okay. Anyway, but Sean's a great guy, and I've known him for a long time.
Yeah.
Earl.
Yep.
It's time for a big killer 1 minute debate.
Yep. You have your phone?
No, we'll just go. I'll go 30 seconds on my thing. What's our topic today?
The topic today has been a heated debate in our house, actually. Mm-hmm. It's sleepaway camp versus day camp.
I could hear the with day camp right there in your voice. You actually, you're influencing
I'm setting
the
it up.
Judges.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Sleepaway versus day camp.
Much better.
Okay. You're first today.
All right.
I'm going to watch the clock.
You're watching the clock?
Yeah, the second's
right.
Tell me
ready. When it, tell me go. When it, go. Okay. Day camp. I love my kids. Unlike you, I want to be with my kids. They mean something in my life. So they go off during the day. They have fun. They can explore. There are a million kind of day camps nowadays, right? Millions. They can go to sports camp, art camp, dance camp, any kind of camp, claymaking camp, mud camp, any camp you want. Then you come home and you hang out with your family who loves you. And here's the biggest thing. My kids are growing up so fast. And I know before long they're going to be off and leaving me. and I just love them, and I want them to be here at Sleepaway Camps for Losers. Murr. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Are you watching the second hand?
Yeah, I got it. Ready, set, go.
The thing is about Sleepaway Camp, it isn't about me and how much I miss the kids. It's about the joy that they get from camp. And that's, to me, I'd rather miss them but give them the best experience of their life. They will learn to live with people, like you said, get to know people, deal with people that they hate. They're going to learn to build fires and swim and do gymnastics and sing stupid songs and have funny, like, jokes.
Murr.
That was not 30 seconds.
I did it in my hands. I did one Mississippi.
Oh, my gosh.
I won.
I didn't even get to give a good argument, but I know that Sleepaway is way better. You're just bitter because you didn't have a good experience.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, tell us who won the debate. And please know that I really had so much more to say, and I think Jeff cut me off too early. Tweet us at The Family Coach or at Jeff Perlman. Use the hashtag TheSportsParent so we can see your comments. You can find us on Facebook at Jeff Perlman, and you can find me at The Family Coach. We'll put links up and information about the topics we discussed on our show on our website, thesportsparentpodcast.com. Jeff's website is jeffperlman.com, and you can check out his amazing blog, which I only sometimes read, and take a look at his Quaz, which is Jeff's Q&A series.
And Catherine's website, by the way, with a lovely new post.
Thank
you. Really great.
Thank you.
At thefamilycoach.com. We'd like to thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to The Sports Parent on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. And if you liked our show, please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and a review if you can. It's very easy to do. You would say very easy, right?
I would.
And we just want to say for the record, this is actually really important, because the only way you pop up on iTunes is if people give you 5-star ratings. And we both feel like mini prostitutes are even doing this, but I feel like you have to, right?
I mean, we do it because we love it and we're having a good time, but it is nice if people listen. And no one will know about us except our friends and family if people don't.
And they're going to get tired of us. So search iTunes for The Sports Parent. Click on the podcast, not the individual episode, the podcast as a whole. And when it comes up, you should see details next to the logo. Next to the details, it should say reviews and ratings. Click that heading, then add a comment and just give us 5 stars. Please, please, please. And if you have topics you would like for us to discuss on the show, send us an email to Catherine with a C at Catherine@thefamilycoach.com. Audio production assistant from Andrew Perella, the great Andrew Perella. Music by the insanely talented MC White Owl and Static Selecta. And until next week's episode of The Sports Parent, win, lose, tie, or even walk off, take your kids for ice cream after the game.